There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. This episode is brought to you by Noom. Forget one-size-fits-all diets. With Noom, you get a personalized weight loss plan that's tailored to your lifestyle. No food is off limits. Enjoy your favorites while discovering healthier habits. Noom's users love the flexible approach, blending psychology and biology to help you lose weight in a way that's sustainable for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Greetings and welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 145. Hey, the Nerdist Podcast Live, also known as Jonah, Matt, and myself, are going to be coming to a town near you. If you lived in Northampton, Massachusetts on November 30th, which is really soon, at least at the recording of this podcast, it is. January 6th, we're going to be at the 930 Club in D.C. March 2nd, Boulder. March 3rd, Austin, Texas. March 23rd, Philadelphia. March 24th, Atlanta. March 30th, Minneapolis. April 12th, Madison, Wisconsin. April 13th, Chicago, Illinois. April 14th, Iowa City, Iowa. And more dates to be added soon. Damn it, I wanted to get that all in one breath. Then girls would have liked me. All right. Anyway, this episode is super exciting. This is Kurt Loder, who we worked together on MTV for years, and I don't know if I ever actually met him until the recording of this podcast. Isn't life crazy that way? Not really, huh? It's not weird. You can work with someone and never actually meet him. It's a good lesson to take away. Go say hi to people in your office you've never talked to before. Go give a hearty hug to Carol in accounting, or how about Marv in human resources? That weird sounding department that says you can't take your dick out and show it to other people at the Xerox machine. Ah, it's gonna be a good day at work tomorrow. You're welcome! No, boss or closest immediate superior, you're fired! I'm lonely. Kurt Loder on the Nerdist Podcast. You hear it. First.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Okay.
I think we're recording, Matthew. You can just adjust that on the fly. We're actually recording a meltdown now. I'm going to go into airplane mode.
This is very cool, recording meltdown comics.
Up here. Yeah, it's very, it feels very high fidelity in a way. Like, yeah, we're doing a thing in an indie store. Kurt Loder, it's very exciting to have you here on the podcast.
Good to be here. At Meltdown Comics, especially.
At Meltdown Comics. Have you ever been to Meltdown?
I never have. It's the first time. It's very cool.
And you like comics, though.
I love comics. Yeah. There are certain things I know about. I'm anxiously awaiting the arrival of the Fables Christmas issue.
Nice.
Next month.
Nice.
Love Fables. I think we can all agree on that, can't we? They're all nodding their heads.
I think we can all agree on Fables. I had a Fables conversation last night. Well, there was a comic buzz last night. Jonah's girlfriend, Deanna, put on an art show here at Meltdown. And then it's just one of the great things about Meltdown. And then outside is Kevin Eastman and a bunch of people painting a mural of the first issue of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on the side of the building. So it was a fun nerd fiasco.
They said some guy that like works in one of the other parts of this building came out and was just like, no, what? No. And then they came out and they was like, oh, okay, all right.
As long as it's turtles.
Yeah.
So it all revolves around Meltdown
Comics. It all revolves around Meltdown Comics in one way or another. Or Guitar Center. I hear they're having a sale this week.
Are they having that sale this
weekend? It's Tuesday. Fender Strats and 30%
off. That's always Squire Strats.
That's like it's always a 90s flashback weekend on K-Rock. Always that and always a sale.
Get a free set of drumsticks from Zildjian.
Zildjian drumsticks.
Oh, my God. Kurt,
they don't make drumsticks, do they?
Do they? I don't know if
they do.
Do they?
Please
say what you're going to say.
They're one of the oldest family-owned companies in...
Zildjian is?
Yeah, because they started in, like, 15-something.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say Zildjian sounds like it was part of the Turkish Empire or something.
It was.
I'm on the floor that you know that.
Yeah.
That is pretty amazing.
Well, that's their whole ad campaign, is just how long they've been around.
Well, I just read it in this.
I was a fan of Zildjian. I'm no Sabian guy.
Newsweek. Why don't their ads say, like, Zildjian, 550 years, motherfucker, or just something? You can say that if you're that old.
Yeah, if you're 500 years old, you can say motherfucker in print.
I think there's, like, some, like, godfather vampire who runs Zildjian, and he's just not died, and he's just been alive.
He's in a dark room surrounded with symbols.
More drumsticks.
He just keeps on licking his finger.
The sound will live forever.
It will. Kurt, we were at MTV at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I ever actually met you.
I'm not sure either. I don't remember much before last month. So. that was longer than that, right? That was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago. I was there like 94 to 98. But you came in 87? 88. For Week in Rock. And then it became MTV News. And then MTV News was... I mean, MTV News, as ridiculous and, you know, crappy and sort of superfluous.
It wasn't that bad.
No.
Oh,
no.
Sorry.
I mean, as the rest of MTV was, MTV News always had this really, like, a grounded kind of, you know, a really good point of view, a very valid point of view.
I think it was improved by its context to some extent.
I think the people involved. How did that come about? You had been at Rolling Stone, and just give me some history.
Okay, it's not going to be on the level of Zildjian symbols.
It starts in 1698.
100 years after the Zildjian Empire toppled the Middle East.
I was at Rolling Stone. They called me up one day, said, "Have you ever thought about being on television?" Who's ever thought of that? I said, "No." I went over, did a camera test. It was terrible. They hired me. They had somebody, they had a producer there from CNN who was very serious about it. We can do real news about that stuff. It'll have a little kookiness, but it has to have good stuff too. We did it, and that's how it was. And I think it was the novelty of it helped to make it as successful as it was.
I guess, but I remember, I mean, MTV News was a completely separate department.
Yeah.
And it was untouchable by the rest of the network because it had so it was like the news department and then the image campaign department was the other untouchable department. Hmm. And the image campaign department was where you'd see, like, that's where Dennis Leary did his spots and the Jimmy the Cab Driver.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There was a devoted image campaign department whose sole purpose was to essentially create viral videos before viral videos.
Like the Toby Huss.
Like all the Toby Huss stuff. Right? Yeah, yeah. So first of all, what was it like editing Rolling Stone in the 80s?
Well, I wasn't the editor. I was a senior editor, but I was mainly writing stories.
Oh, okay.
It was great. Yeah, you know, it was a different time. And you got to do a lot of things. You travel around. It was when they were paying people to travel.
Exactly.
Paying people at all.
They thought the money and the drugs would money. Never
was
end.
That when you started asking the Rolling Stones to stop making music?
That was about the time.
What the? Come on. Steel wheels.
Really?
For just about one.
Yeah.
Where did you go? What did you get to do?
You know, that might be a good album. We've never listened to it.
That's true.
Here's the Babylon. Yeah, that was a good tour. Dave Matthews Band opened up for them. That was a really good tour.
Oh, that's your connection to it. It's a fucking Dave Matthews Band. How many times have you interviewed Dave Matthews? He is a freaking Dave Matthews.
I think you have.
No, don't say that. He's a fan.
Loves
that.
I do. I enjoy the Dave Matthews Band.
We had to
I grew up in the Northeast.
She had to cover my co-vivant had to cover a Dave Matthews show once, standing up. It was outside.
Did you hear how he said
for three hours?
Yeah, that's what I do every time they come around.
And like the guy with the fiddle and the dreadlocks can't play. He can't play. You know,
he's not the best.
Oh my God! This is amazing.
He's not the best.
The sax player.
Wait a minute.
Kurt Loder is accurate right now.
Wait a minute.
I'm not going to disagree with him.
No one really gets away with dissing. Like it just.
None of it has any impact on Matt. No, but when Kurt Loder sits down and says part of the Dave Matthews Band is, then you're like, well, I mean, yeah, you know, there's
some element all the time, but we look like a couple of hipsters, so it doesn't really.
It's not Perlman up there, obviously.
That would be amazing.
His fiddle solos are very. Much the same.
Well, we won't talk about the sax guy. Or Dave.
Oh, wait, what?
Hey, Dave, great comic actor. I'm not sure if you've ever seen.
He's very good. He's multi-talented. That's true.
Playing the gay guy. What a movie that was.
Playing the gay guy, Dave Matthews Band.
No, he played a gay
Jonah
guy.
Ray, there's a line.
No, he played a gay guy in a movie.
In the Absolute movie? Yeah. Like the southern guy that turns out to be gay. Yeah.
And immediately they indicate being gay by immediately turning all queenie.
Yeah,
it was like really condescending and kind of disgusting.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a bad movie.
Yeah,
Adam Sandler's a great guy, but that was a bad movie.
Oh yeah. What was that called?
It was I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
Yes.
And then he was also in the other one, right? The hairdresser.
Don't Mess with Zohan.
Don't mess with Zohan.
And then he was in the last one they did with Jennifer Aniston.
He's prepping him to be his new Steve Buscemi. He's just a weird guy to throw into the movie.
I don't want to be Buscemi, man.
Well, he won't have as much time to go out and make music. So
that's good.
No offense. I'm
America
sorry.
Wins, but I lose.
They're not touring this year either. That must have been an amazing. I mean, like I think you know my time at MTV coming in at 94 was a pretty fun time. Yeah. I mean, we had the groundswell of grunge in full effect, and MTV was still relatively.
We had your show.
I had the show, which was helpful. Yeah, yeah. But MTV was relatively popular at the time. But I always look back and think. No. But the 80s is when MTV would have been incredible. Like there was still a lot of music videos, which people don't really watch.
And you could only see them on MTV.
You could only see them on MTV, which was huge. Except for like you had your night flight, like your little programming blocks on cable would do music videos every once in a while. But you also had Remote Control.
Great show.
And when they aired The Young Ones, and then Kevin Seal, who I was the VJ that I always identified with the most.
At the time, apparently, I just learned this. When MTV started out, they said, well, we're playing videos around the clock. We got, you know, the huge library. They had 35 videos. And some of them were like Cliff Richard's videos. But they play them around the clock, and people didn't care because they just sit there pasted to their televisions because it was so unique. And today it's not, of course.
And it didn't take long to – it only took a handful of years for people to start getting bored watching – videos, which is why, and people always complain like MTV doesn't show videos. And you're like, because no one watches them. Yeah. That's why they started.
Because they all started being the same. They're all the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I don't think it's a great loss, but they. that's why they don't do it. And you can't get ratings on videos because if somebody's watching a video, they love it. The next one they hate, they tune out. You can't get ratings.
Oh man.
So it's now it's like it's reality TV world.
Yeah.
Like, 16 and pregnant.
Great show.
Yeah. Well, imagine all 16-year-olds who are pregnant out there.
Yeah.
They are, right?
Because no, that's actually, because of that actually, it's the audience that isn't. And what do they see in that show?
Matt likes that show because it's almost a weird, depraved version of Storage Wars. Like, where the girl is the storage unit. You don't know what's inside.
That's the locker.
What do we find? What's going to come out of there?
Oh. Years of sadness shooting out of vaginas. Well, you know.
Wasn't there was one where it's like, and the guy who got the girl pregnant still didn't want to use condoms or whatever. He's like, yeah, I don't
blame him. He already had the worst thing that could happen.
What are the chances of it happening again?
You know, I just can't feel it, man. What, the 18 years of responsibility weighing down on you from having to raise a child? Yeah, you can't feel any of that.
They've got 8 months to coast. So. I think I see his outlook there.
Yeah. Take a time clock, man.
So what was the vibe at MTV in the 80s? Was it as fun as I? Because people always think working at MTV was a blast in the 90s, and I always say no. Well, it was fine. It was an okay fun job, but it wasn't this crazy party. It was a very controlled environment that they made seem like it was crazy.
Yeah, it's like anything. I think when things start out, nobody knows what they're doing, and you can do whatever you want. There was just, as you say, so much money floating around, and if you said, you know, Guns N' Roses is playing Paris, mm-hmm. So let's go to Paris. Let's stay at some great hotel, and there was just all that money, and now you can't afford lunch.
Yeah.
You know, so things have changed a lot.
What do you think about the economics or the new economic models of media? Do you feel like we're going in a good direction? Do you think the sort of free/freemium model is good overall, or do you feel like, well, it was kind of better when there were only a few outlets? And
what do you mean by freemium? Nobody gets paid?
Well, freemium.
No, I don't like that at all.
No, I mean, freemium just sort of being like, you know, you put, you know, like we do on the podcast, we put stuff out for free. If we come perform to, you know, in someone's town, then they come see us, or, you know, which is nice.
That way.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's really bad for writers, because writers don't get paid at all. You used to be able to make a living from writing, and now if you go to some online outlet, and they'll say, well, we've got a story for you, but we're not going to pay you.
Right.
You know, so you'll get a byline.
Right.
And they're called the Huffington Post.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But they're not the only ones either. Yeah, so that sucks, really. I'm opposed to that. But this is... It's great, all the new media, you get paid in different ways. It's a benefit to you in a different way.
That's what's cool about what Bill Simmons is doing with Grantland. He's like hiring writers and like Chuck Klosterman and Katie Bakes. And they're like good writers. And you can go on that site and just read. Because it's not like they don't have video content. It's just articles.
Yeah, that's a great site.
Writers.
Good, like McSweeney's is like that too, which is nice.
Yeah.
I wonder what their audience is like, you know, to actually, do people care?
I hope it's people like me that just enjoyed
your
content.
Oh my God, you don't understand how happy you're making Jonah today. You have no idea.
Oh man, you know, I woke up hungover and I was like, oh man, I gotta get down there.
Today, the greatest.
I'm sorry.
I was 10 when I started listening to them. And
I listened to a lot of things when I was 10 that I don't listen to anymore.
Well,
like my father.
My mother.
Yeah. And we just both reveal things about ourselves.
I know.
You were just teasing me, man.
No, it's fine. I mean, you're not teasing me. You're teasing me.
Transitively, we're teasing you.
Yeah, we should move on. Who else do you listen to?
Who else do
Regina
I listen
Spector.
To?
Regina Spector.
I do listen
but
to Regina
But that's, I think,
Spector.
Just because you have a crush on her.
Well, no, I enjoyed her music before I saw her.
Okay. And then you got the crush.
Yeah.
Is that about it, really?
No, I listen to I listen to a lot of old jazz. I listen to Miles Davis a lot. Mm-hmm. And I like Joe Pass, like old jazz guitarists.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I can kind of see
Schofield. I enjoy.
I can see why
you're a guitar guy.
Yeah, I like.
I can see why you would bleed into the Dave Matthews sphere if you liked old. If you just liked jazz riffing and all that sort of.
But you never got into that other jazz stuff, though, right? You never got into Fish or.
Fish, I have a lot of Fish. I never got like super into Fish, but
can we back up with you just connected jazz and Dave Matthews in some way?
Doesn't he do a lot of freeform jazz guitar?
He does a lot of freeform jazz. He has weird time signatures, so that stuff kind of translates over.
An alternative explanation for that?
Yeah,
his band can't keep time. Might be. I could be wrong, but
Carter Beaufort can keep time. He's a fantastic drummer.
He is actually the best guy in the group. The drummer.
Yeah,
he is great. Yeah, he showed me a video of just some video you had a DVD of just the drummer playing the song.
He's really good.
This is great.
He's fantastic.
Surrounded by drums.
He's like an old R&B guy or something.
Yeah, he started disco bands.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's the oldest guy in the band. Anyway,
by disco rip.
He was on Neil Young's disco album.
There's a town.
That's always a weird thing when you're a kid getting into rock and roll and you're like, hey, I've never seen this Neil Young record. Put it on. Oh, no.
So, old Canadian Disco.
Transistor album.
Yes.
Saturday Night Beaver, the old Canadian Disco band.
Yes.
a delayed reaction. Thank you. Thanks for giving me props for the horrible pun
that
I just threw out there. But I really, you know, I actually did watch MTV News to get my music-based news, which no one was really doing at the time. No one really took it seriously in the 80s? Yeah, was MTV kind of the first outlet to say, or were you the first person to say, you know, there is actually an audience here who might be interested in what these bands are up to?
Well, I think it was just a repeat of the Rolling Stone experience, because when they started in 1967, nobody took them seriously. And the reason they broke the Charles Manson story is because, you know, some of their reporters showed up at the DA's office or something, and they looked like a bunch of hippies. And they said, whatever, yeah, sure, here's what's happening. You won't do anything with it. And they did lots with it. And they took, you know, music news seriously and took music seriously. And MTV sort of repeated that in a way. Mm-hmm. And it seemed odd at first, but, you know, probably still odd today. I mean, how much serious news is there, really?
I guess that's true.
In any
field.
Do they
have any kind of news?
I have not watched MTV in... years. I don't know what goes on there anymore.
I think they have a skeletal presence, probably.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure.
But Norris, he took over.
John was... No, I don't think so.
No, no. He left a lot.
John's gone?
Yeah.
It was John, and then Allison, and
a bunch of guys.
I think everything's been taken over by reality TV, and they're serving their audience. The audience loves that stuff. I hate reality TV, but
I can't. I don't. I'm not,
I mean, they're following the economic imperative.
I guess so,
but they brought back Beavis and Butthead, which is nice, and they are bringing back Liquid Television.
Yeah,
so that's nice. Cool.
They try every once in a while. They try, you know, like they did Human Giant. Or like they try to do stuff that I feel like MTV would have done in the 80s, and then the people watching now just don't seem to want it. They just want to... you know, watch television with their mouths agape and drooling. I mean, like, look what Snook and Dunn got up to. You know, like, they don't give a fuck about any kind of comedy or edgy comedy.
I don't know why my brain thought you were referring to Anna Paquin's character on True Blood.
Look what Snook
and Dunn up to. Are there any Americans on that show playing Southerners? It's like New Zealander, Australian, British.
Or should there be?
Everybody got that Southern accent.
Superman's British now. I'm okay with this.
We have to bring these superheroes back to the United States where they belong.
Yeah. They took our superheroes.
They took our superheroes.
So is that show going down or up? How do you see it?
Which one? True Blood?
Yeah.
I've talked about this before, and I feel like...
Too many creatures.
Okay, yes.
Too many creatures.
Fairies. It was fairies.
Fairies. Let's talk about fucking Weir Panthers. That's the one that always got me. When I heard Weir Panther this season, I was like, what the fuck are you doing, Alan Ball?
They just made that up.
But the first season of the show, you know, was like, okay, interesting. This is an interesting allegory for intolerance in the South. And, you know, I would like to see a little more supernatural creature stuff. And then all of a sudden, everyone's a fucking thing.
Comes.
And then the avalanche comes. And, you know, as I've said, I've talked about this so many times in the podcast because I feel bad for watching the show because it is my guilty. It is a guilty pleasure. And I did see the last season all the way through, and... God damn it, if everyone isn't a fucking thing.
Yeah, well, you know.
Everyone's a fucking thing.
No one's not something.
The town, I'm surprised the town itself needs to be like a living, breathing, supernatural creature.
Exactly.
The town is on the Hellmouth.
That's right. Yeah, the town's on the Hellmouth. That's what's going to happen. And Buffy was a series I actually loved.
Oh, yeah,
and at the end of every season, you're like, how are they going to top the world-ending threat from last? Oh, a bigger world-ending threat. And then to the end, we're on it. We're on
a
world
can only end so many times. 7, exactly.
Yeah. still love that show. Are you watching anything? What are you watching?
I like Han a lot. I think that's very good. And Justified, I think, is one of the
shows. Oh, my
shows
God.
On.
Justified.
Yeah, I heard it's great. I love Tim.
Never heard
so
anyone
well
say they like Hung a lot.
It's,
I've never heard that.
I've heard people.
I watched the first two seasons, and I was way into that show, and I've just been too busy to watch it this past season.
I've never seen it, only because I've heard such bad things about it.
No!
It's actually good.
It's good. Yeah. Jane...
Thomas Jane.
Not Thomas Jane. Jane...
No, the woman that...
Jane Addams. Yes. Is... I think, like, Emmy should be nominated for an Emmy.
She's really good. It sounds like a stupid show, like it'd be crap, but it's actually really well done. Yeah. Although it may be wandering, it may be drifting this year.
Really?
I guess it's hard. I don't know. I mean, there's so many more pressures with creating stuff these days than just like, you have to keep raising stakes and they force you to, we have to draw people in, we have to do gimmicks, we have to do this.
That's what kind of made me check out of Weeds. It's just like everything kind of kept on getting too big and it took away of just the quaintness of it.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, like how they got involved with a huge Mexican political drug cartel.
There's the, like, you know, she had the shop and then the guy comes up and they don't put anything on this. You know, just like, I'm like, well, that's a bit much.
Well, it's built in, I think. You have to go somewhere and there aren't many places to go.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like MTV News when they added vampires. Tabitha Soren.
Oh.
I'm kidding. I never met Tabitha.
Sure,
but
she's sweet.
She is sweet. She was, I always thought, I wanted to see her a little warmer. I want to see Tabitha. I want to see her a little warmer on television. But she was very, very serious. Very serious on the MTV News.
Well, you know, she's smart. She's very smart.
Me no understand.
No, well, you know.
Pretty girl talk smart words.
What word
brain.
You make mean?
Hurt brain. Brain hurt. Who else?
You tell me Biggie die. Why?
Oh, you brought... Speaking of dead musicians, you broke the Kurt Cobain story. And I remember watching that. I actually remember...
How did you feel?
I was pretty fucking surprised. I was pretty surprised. I mean, I was...
That he was dead, or...
Well, just, yeah, yeah. I was surprised that he died. I was surprised...
He just tried to kill himself 2 weeks earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But I guess, I don't
he
know.
Did it. It was kind of like, one of those, like when Chris Farley died. It was just like, there was like two or three things that happened leading up to it. Yeah. So by the time Havre was like,
I don't know. I guess it's just that thing where you're, you know, where you're younger and your idea of death is that something that happens to old people. And I mean, unless you've had people.
Unless it happens to young people
or people in your immediate family. But it's just, it's when it happens to people that are in your sphere of influence, it really, that's sort of the mirror of mortality where you're like, oh yeah, people can just fucking die. Like, I don't know. Cause we certainly, this sort of, I don't know, that sort of iconoclast 80s and 90s. And we, seeing people that you see every day on television, like, oh, that guy just died. Like, it still rocked me a bit, and I'm still sad that Ken Ober's dead. Like, that.
Yeah, he was a great guy.
That one freaks me out.
It's odd because, you know, that movie, Kurt Loder about a son. Kurt Cobain. It's all about me. Kurt Cobain about his son. It was a series of interviews that Michael Azarad did with him not long before he died, and he sounds completely upbeat about it. But he's talking about how, you know, the guys in the band are kind of pissed off at him because he's taking the majority of the money because he's writing the songs. And he sounds like he's really over them. He wants to go on and have, I don't know, strings or whatever, or disco beat. But it sounds like he's really ready to keep going. He sees the future as a possible thing, and then he died, and it's weird. He was kind of an up-and-down guy, I guess.
Yeah. Did you know him well? Did you know Kurt well?
No.
No?
No. You don't know these people well.
No, I guess that's true.
You do 10-minute interviews with them on television. You don't know anybody.
I guess, I guess I had that same perception of the MTV cluster that people had of me when I was there. It was like, you guys must know everyone. Like,
hanging out at the beach house.
You show up for work and occasionally people come through and you go, hey, nice to see you on award shows. But there were no, you know, I wasn't a part of any grand hangouts.
Hang out with the Tiki God?
I did. That guy's name was Andy, and he now works on the Tonight Show.
Really?
I had him do
a writer?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. I had him do my outgoing message in 1995. I had him get on a pavement and go, "I am the Mighty Beatles, Tiki God." Little message for Chris Hardwick.
Oh my God! I forgot about that fucking thing.
Yeah.
That was a guy named Andy. He was a producer, and he just, as in typical MTV fashion, would constantly pull producers and people in to do voiceovers because it was cheaper. Like, the girl who played Daria just worked in the office at MTV.
Oh, really?
And then
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that? No. Yeah. She just worked at the did you know this, Jennifer? Yeah, she worked at the offices at MTV in New York, and they just, you know, liked her voice, so they pulled her in.
Wow.
The other guy who did, for the longest time, did the, "This MTV news break is brought to you by..." Like, that guy was a sound guy.
Oh, weird.
Who now works on, I don't know, he might work on Ferguson or one of the other shows, but it's... Yeah, that was just the way MTV was. Yeah, yeah.
You can improvise at the beginning, but then...
Yeah.
Do you still get stopped on the street or anything?
People still remember it, but not as much. I mean, like, it definitely... It gets less and less each year, but I still go places, especially in the Midwest, where people are like, "Oh, fuck, Singled Out." I'm like, I'm on a lot of other television now. But I don't, I mean, it doesn't bother me. I don't get uppity about it. I think I am impressed and surprised that anyone even remembers that show because it was on so long ago.
It is interesting, though, because it's like the age where it's just like a certain age, a person will be like, "Oh, Singled Out." Then there's a younger person will be like, "Oh, you know, Shipmates."
Same way that I would have been with, same way when I met Ken Ober. You know, when Remote Control had been off for quite a few years, but he was such a huge celebrity to me because he was someone I identified with. You know, it's that you get those people in between like 14 and 24.
Yeah.
And then if they watch stuff every day, it just gets into their skin.
Yeah. There's so many people that came out of Remote Control too, and Sandler.
Yeah,
Sandler and Colin Quinn and Kari Wirk.
It was a great show.
Yeah, it was a really good show.
Well, MTV tried to redo that show every few years. They tried to redo that like that sort of veiled sketch comedy game show format.
Idiot Savants, was that one of them?
Idiot Savants and Trash. The first show I did for MTV was another version of that.
Yeah.
When you made the jump from Rolling Stone, were you working at both places at the same time? No. Or did you have to leave Rolling Stone?
I had to leave Rolling Stone, and it was a totally different environment. Obviously, it was odd. I wasn't very good at it. I think I was a novelty because I don't have the effervescence really required for television, I don't think. So having somebody there, it's kind of, you know, deadpan was odd. And I think that was probably my appeal, was that I was odd and out of place.
Well, I think the fact that it was pretty a straight news report was a great balance to the rest of the channel, which was a lot of tiki guy stuff. a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, it was. And at the time, the channel was a lot of fun, and it was fun to do, and had a blast doing a lot of it.
And when did that stop? When was the last MTV News report?
That I did, I think it was 2000 or something. So the Week in Rock ran for like 10 or 12 years, which is not bad.
Yeah, that's good.
Could it not run now because there's no rock anymore?
Well, there's that. It's not enough. Came out. That's it for this Week in Rock.
This album came out.
Corn still sucks. Thank you and good night.
This album came out and sold 1,000 units. Wow, congratulations. 1,000. That's, I mean, you don't know how hard that is now.
Let's look at that in 90s terms. Let's put that through the aggregate.
We do need some kind of reverse inflation for album sales to show like cultural impact. Like? That. Yeah. In 1980, 1,000 would really be like 100,000.
Yeah. It's like A Guy with the Wind actually made like $40 billion or something at the box office.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're reversing that.
We're absolutely reversing that. Do you feel like, what do you think? What do you think is going on with music now? And why are we not seeing, because, you know, even stations that I used to listen to a lot, like K-Rock, which is, you know, a station I worked at, I still feel like, oh, well, they're having a bit of a struggle finding their identity because, you know, that whatever that used to be alternative music just isn't really much of a genre anymore.
Well, they're also strapped down to their formats. I mean, that's what's so boring about a lot of radio or anything.
Yeah. Who listens to music that way?
Well, it's like also, you know, they're in luck right now because every band that they used to play, you know, 10, 15 years ago are now releasing albums again, like Sublime and Jane's Addiction and Soundgarden. They could still play all the same bands because no one ever fucking goes away.
Did you ever go to any of those legendary Unplugged recordings?
No, I might not have. I know the guy that started them.
Alex Coletti.
Yeah. I missed that.
Never
trust a big button that's mad. My girl is poison.
That wouldn't be that bad. They got that new Jack Swing, man.
I think there's a lack of crazy people in music now, especially in rock and roll. People aren't getting drunk and wasted and falling off balconies or anything.
No, I guess that's true. I think I remember seeing that when Franz Ferdinand won like the British or like whatever the European Music Award, the MTV, someone was like, they're just nice guys. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Well, there was Jay Rietard, who was a great, he was from Tennessee, really great.
Oh, he's great. Yeah, but like, you didn't see him everywhere.
You know? Yeah, but then, like, you know, if he was able to keep going, if he didn't, you know, OD. But like, he was kind of on his way to just being this legendary, like, just dude in a guitar, fucking tearing it up around the country.
Well, MTV, the power that MTV had in the 80s was to take people like that. Or like Weird Al, or like They Might Be Giants, or someone who was offbeat, and put them at the forefront, onto a platform where they knew a lot of people were watching. And now I think it's just a lack of a singular platform that everyone can see. I mean, even with the internet, but the internet's just so expansive.
Well, I think they're also at that time, you know, you're doing, so let's do stuff that's cool, maybe people will come to it. And after a while, you're doing stuff that you know people will come to.
Right.
And you're not showing them anything except what they've seen, which probably is true of everything.
I guess, because that's when you start getting into the sort of fear-based programming. Like, well, I don't want to take a risk on a new thing because I don't want to lose.
Yeah, give them what they've seen.
Which is crazy because the fear-based programming, which is loosely, I mean, it's all like bottom-line dollar stuff. Like, we can bank on this thing right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're going to lose everyone in the future. Yeah. You need to throw some of that into research and development.
Yeah, let it ride. Why don't you let it ride?
No. let it ride.
There's a new History Channel show called Real Deal. And it looks like it's right up my alley because they have, they offer, someone comes in with their collectible item. There will be three dealers standing around the table who offer them money. They can either take the offer from the dealer or go to auction.
No.
Wow. It's everything I love in one.
Real Deal on one of the History Channels?
Yeah. It's.
I can see how that's a historical event.
Yeah, you need. Listen, wow. It's not anymore, guys. We accept that. South Park did a great job.
Now we're like, I'm missing the days when all they showed were Hitler documentaries.
South Park did a great job last week, or 2 weeks ago, with the History Channel Thanksgiving. Did you see that?
No.
Did anybody see that?
No.
It was great, because they're just like, they do research by watching Ancient Aliens on the History Channel. And then it fucking turns out that there are aliens, and it's like just like Thor, but instead it's a pilgrim fighting the evil Indians to save all the stuffing.
God damn that show for consistently being consistently. Funny for over 13 years.
And the Broadway show is great.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's unbelievable.
I listened to the soundtrack, but like,
you ruined it for yourself.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It was on. It was, you know, it was, I wanted to,
there's stuff on going on stage that's never been done on Broadway before. Almost everything going on stage has never been done on Broadway before.
Like War Horse?
Just
like War Horse.
I haven't seen that, but I anticipate the movie a lot.
Yes, me too. Yeah. I saw the trailer for the actual stage show, and I was like, I want to see that movie.
I was kidding.
So you're just in town for a couple days in L.A.?
Yes, yes.
Do you get to L.A. often?
Not as much as I used to, but I have spent a lot of time in L.A.
Because you wrote a book, Kurt Loder.
I did.
The Good, the Bad, and the God-Awful 21st Century Movie Reviews.
Can you hold it up to the mic?
Yeah, can you guys see this? Can you just want to get a look at the cover?
I like how, ironically, they can't hear you when you do that. Because
they can't see or hear. So I'm just going to hold the book up right now so you can see the cover.
Or riffle through the pages.
There's a lovely...
Make the riffling noise.
This is a good read. This is a really good read.
That's a big book.
It is a big book.
Good for you. Jesus Christ.
Did you get a call from Chris Connolly? Like, what the fuck, Kurt? Come on.
No, he gave me a blurb.
Oh, he did, Connolly?
Yeah, he's a good
guy. I love Connolly.
He's a great guy.
Connolly's still great. He's amazing. On the BS report every now and then, and he does great stuff on ESPN right now.
Connolly was a guy like you. Was a senior editor at a movie magazine.
At an industry magazine.
He ran Premiere.
And you know why he left?
No.
They tried to get him to do some shady thing with the advertising department. Wanted him to report on something favorably, and he quit.
Wow. That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Makes me love him even more.
Yeah. He's a great guy.
I remember having lunch
good
with
hair.
Him. I remember his hair style always changes. Every time you see Chris Connolly, he has different hair, and you're always like, you're like a weird troll doll. Like, every time I see you, but it works. Like, every time it's different. But Connolly's great, and we were having lunch somewhere in Santa Monica in the 1900s, and I was like, so what movies do you like, or what directors do you like? And he was like, yeah, I really like Quentin Tarantino. There's this movie coming out called Pulp Fiction that I think is going to be really good. And I was like, really? Sounds gimmicky to me. Yeah. I don't know, Chris Connolly, guy who knows more about film than I do.
So weirdly, both of you were right.
So, or you'll seem right in retrospect.
I guess, well, maybe.
History's revenge.
Although I don't know why you leave a gun on the kitchen counter when you're staking out an apartment to go in and take a shit. But I guess it's just one of those things that happens.
Well, if he didn't, how was he going to get shot in that really cool scene?
Oh, that's...
I
guess that's true.
How would we get to see the Modesty Blaze book?
Yes, exactly.
So what? When did you have the idea to do... Oh, here we go. Hancock. I'm just flipping through the reviews. God damn it.
Hancock is a great movie.
It's the first two acts of that movie are phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it
changes completely.
So, I mean, you can actually see the script revisions and the reshoots. You can almost see the pages on the screen in the studio. I don't know the notes. I don't know what happened, but
it's bold. I liked it. I like the idea that it completely changes tone and crashes to earth at the end, of course, but you know.
It is such a genius idea for a movie, and it starts out. And I really love Will Smith, and then halfway through that whole, we're these ancient creatures who can't be together. We have to be separated. Yeah. And she's one too, and fuckers. And then you know, Bateman and Charlize Theron are just walking down the boardwalk at the end, just kind of like, oh, so did you meet Hitler or whatever they were talking about? And it's like, do you not understand the impact of this? You're gonna die, and she's gonna outlive you, and
but she's always gonna be hot.
That's right. It's somebody scored.
Bateman will always be upbeat.
Yeah, the trick, guys, you gotta fuck one of them angel aliens they got out there. She can't be next to one of her other alien pals, or it all goes to shit. But that was such a great... Oh, the first half of that movie.
It was brave of Will Smith to do that, I think. You know, to using all his... Risking his charisma on doing dodgy material.
I heard when they... And I don't know if this is true. This could just be one of those Hollywood legends, and I'm probably stupid, but...
Is this about Fatty Arbuckle?
It is not about Fatty Arbuckle, though we're pretty sure he was set up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
that's
definitely.
The whole Natalie Woods, Joe Wagner thing.
Joe Wagner, Robert Wagner, comedian, who was a friend of ours, who was not on that yacht.
I like the thing if that Joe was on that boat.
Yeah.
I think something was
Joe's, yeah. Joe's okay. What?
Joe's fine. Okay.
Do you know what's interesting is every year around this time, I mean, because it's the anniversary of her death, we get the Natalie Wood conspiracy thing pop up, like, but was it really an accident? You know, and then it goes away after Thanksgiving. I think the Natalie Wood conspiracy cards are coming earlier and earlier every year.
Yeah. If it were a movie, you'd know that Christopher Walken did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
that's right.
That's pretty certain.
The Natalie Wood conspiracy theories now go with the Grove Christmas tree lighting, which
happens. That happens way earlier.
Snow.
So here's what I heard about Will Smith, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard when it looked like his career was really going to pop, and he's like, okay, he's really going to be a big star. Maybe it was after Independence Day that he sat down with his agents and they looked at every type of movie that historically does well as a blockbuster, and they just went through and plotted out. You're going to do this movie, then you're going to do a superhero movie, then you're going to do this kind of a drama, and then you're going to do this movie, and then you're going to do this movie, and then it's pretty much. Like there was actually a plan in place all along. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you have to anticipate good scripts. I mean, he did have good scripts generally.
Yes,
and you're not sure they're going to.
Well, there's that too.
If that could happen. Could happen.
I really hope Men in Black 3 makes up for Men in Black 2. They're shooting it right now.
Yeah, I know.
But if you ever rewatch
Men in Black 3,
if you ever rewatch all those old Fresh Prince of Bel Air, it's like you got this guy is. The best performer in the world. It doesn't matter what else is going on in the scene. He'll always be the funniest person in it.
He's talented.
I love that, Carlton. That's who you're talking about, right?
That's racist.
He was the funniest person.
So what inspired you to? I mean, obviously your love of movies, but what kind of made you sit down and go, you know, I'm gonna write a tome of.
Well, I didn't write the tome. The thing is, if you'll write movie reviews and they just fly off into the air when they're done, nobody ever sees them again. Nobody cares about them. They don't care about you. They don't care if you're alive. So to the idea of getting all this stuff in one place is very appealing to me. I don't care what happens to the book. It's here, and I have several copies.
Did you write these?
There's one in a mountain in Montana.
Were these compiled from different publications like Reason or any?
A lot of them were from NTV.com. It's 7 years worth of reviews, and several of them are from Reason.com, which I write for now.
Yep.
And it required going back and reading through 500 reviews, some of which are terrible. And you realize, geez.
Have you ever looked at a review and go, why the fuck did I think that?
Absolutely. I didn't put this one on Watchmen, and because Watchmen, I was so excited that the book was being done.
Yeah.
And what he'd seen in advance looked cool. And I just raved about this movie. And then afterwards, thinking about it, I thought, you know, there were things that didn't work.
Yeah.
And I started to question the original material. Like the end, like Alan Moore's end of that book, like, you know, the giant squid. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure about that.
No, man. It would freak everyone the fuck out. Right? And then the world changes.
Yeah, and then and now, you know, I don't
fuck
know.
Fuck Wall Street.
I don't know.
Oh, here we go. Let Me In. I thought Let Me In was a pretty decent remake.
Yeah, it was.
I have yet to watch the remake.
The original was so fucking good, though.
I mean, if you've seen the original, you really don't have to see that.
It is interesting that they just did... I mean, it was almost like a karaoke movie. They're like, yeah, we're going to do the same thing. We're just going to put our people in it. Yeah. Really? You sure you don't want to? Well, we'll change the name a little bit.
Yeah, like, we'll go to Colorado or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But Let the Right One In is such a fucking great movie.
So creepy.
But, you know, Chloe Moritz is really good. I mean, she's a great actress.
I think I'm kind of excited about David Fincher's Dragon Tattoo movie. I think that could be great.
I just like David Fincher.
I want to do the sequels, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo 2, T-O-O, and The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo 3, which would be The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo 3.
Yet Again?
Yeah, Yet Again. Girl with the Dragon Tat 3 was the joke I was trying to get out there. I'll just back into a corner.
What did you like this year?
I really liked Tree of Life. I thought that was great. A lot of people felt differently about that movie. I thought Tower Heist was actually funny.
Yeah, I kind of want to see it.
It was actually funny. I was expecting it to be dreadful.
It's a big movie, a lot of funny people in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was...
I like Gabriel Sidibe.
Yeah, it was... So that was good. Yeah. What have you seen that was good?
I've barely seen anything this year. If I do see anything, I'm usually watching it like on a plane months after it's come out on my iPad or whatever. Yeah. Because I have so little free time these days that when I do have like an afternoon off, for some reason I just feel like I think I just want to stay home. I don't feel like going to, even though sitting in a movie theater is one of the most relaxing activities you can partake.
Unless it's a heart-pounding drama.
Yeah, I don't know. See those, man.
I thought Drive was a really good movie.
Drive was
I
great.
See, yeah. I want to see Drive.
Was great. I thought
Ryan Gosling just rules the moment. You know, yeah, this is really his moment.
Breaking up fights, being all sexy, starring
Eyes
movies.
Of March. Did you see Eyes of March?
Yeah, it was okay.
It's okay.
Yeah. I want to see The Descendants because I love Alexander Payne.
Yeah, Descendants. I'm like looking forward to.
Is it?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm going just because it's filmed in my home.
Was there a dry eye in the house when you saw Parisia Tem and Alexander Payne's short came on, where it was what's her name who was in Justified, the woman who played. Sort of the head of that hillbilly mafia.
Margo Martindale.
Yeah, she's great.
Her whole, like, did you see Parisia Tem?
No, I did not.
It's great. It's just like a series, like, different directors. It's like different directors do, His was Margo Martindale is she's reading the postcard from her trip to Paris. And it's all, like, it's all done in her voiceover about the different things she saw in Paris.
Oh,
and
how she
you know. But it was so fucking good. And then there were other ones in there where you're like, how did that get in this movie? but overall, Parisia Tem was pretty fun. Pretty sweet. Yeah,
The Descendants is really well done, and George Clooney is great in it. I'm a big fan of his.
Do you know Clunes?
No, I don't know Clunes.
Looney Clunes?
No.
Looney Clunes.
I'm a big admirer of Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, which I think is one of the most underrated of all.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
He's a great director, too, so... You know, the sentence is really well done, and just everything about it is good, but you come out of it thinking you're just underwhelmed for some reason.
What was the worst movie you saw this summer as far as the big blockbuster?
Oh, that's a tough one.
That had to be Green Lantern.
Oh, well, Green Lantern.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Transformers 3, I think, was worse than Green Lantern.
Keep going.
Oh, that came
out. Do you know what, though? I didn't see Transformers 3. I've only seen, clips.
Do that to yourself.
I've only seen clips
of it. Do that to yourself.
Yeah. But wait a minute.
No. Do that to yourself.
Okay, turn it back to drinking. Don't let him see it.
Matt, please! Yeah. No, listen, because at least the thing that I can say for Transformers is that at least the robot effect, the CGI looked really cool, but in Green Lantern, did it not?
It looked fine.
I saw the first Transformers, it made me feel dumb because I couldn't understand what was happening on the screen.
Oh, no, that wasn't you.
Oh, that's
that wasn't,
I was just like, maybe I'm just old and I don't understand crazy effects.
Green Lantern was really stupid. Green Hornet was really bad.
Yeah, I didn't remember that.
Did anybody see it?
I saw it on a plane, actually. Yeah. I mean, I like Seth Rogen a lot. I just thought, and I think it was, you know, like if they offered me Green Hornet, I'd be like, fuck, sure, why not? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know.
You'd be a great Kato.
I really would, yeah.
Did you see 50-50?
I did.
Yeah, what'd you think of that?
I think it's very hard to make a funny movie about cancer.
Yes.
So I think this demonstrated that yet again, and I hope it holds everybody off for a couple of years.
Yeah, I just like I don't know why I was expecting. I was like, this looks what a
cancer's funny now.
Gonna,
let's do
yeah,
it
exactly. It's
guys,
been
I got this
five
movie called,
years.
I got this movie called Cancer Clowns. It's all about a circus where everyone has cancer in
love it,
but it's funny.
Let's go.
Yeah.
There's a clip on YouTube for Ricky Gervais's new show on HBO, and it's just the most hilarious thing. He's interviewing Liam Neeson.
Oh, that scene is so I watched that. Like 10
Liam Neeson
times.
Comes to him and says, you know, I want to do a comedy. Hey, I'm a funny guy. And he wants to do a comedy about AIDS and black poverty-stricken horrors in Africa, and it'd be funny. Yeah, so they try to improvise a scene. It's just hilarious.
Yeah, oh my god, it's really good. Like he tells me, he's like, I want to do all kinds of different kind of comedy. I've made a list. I'm always making lists.
That's why Spielberg hired me.
That's
for
why
Schindler's
Spielberg
List.
Hired me. For Schindler's List. And then they laugh. He's like, why are you laughing? And they're like, oh, just say it's all. No, I'm serious. I make lists, and that's why he hired me.
That's amazing.
He's like, I want to do stand up. I want to do improv. I want to do monologues. I want to do funny scenes. He just goes down his list.
Imagine this is on the YouTubes.
Yeah.
It's like
it's
a 5-minute
so
scene,
great.
And it's so
there's
good.
There's a Johnny Depp one too, which is
the Johnny
good.
Depp one's good. It's been getting horrible reviews though. The show
really
fuck
yeah.
them. Yeah,
yeah. It's like everyone's dropping off. They're saying they just like you know they redid the David Brent character, but they gave that to Warwick Davis.
Yeah.
But like it's like there was more than half of the people dropped off in the second episode.
The thing that I enjoy about your reviews is that they're pretty straightforward. They tell you what you liked about the movie. What you know, like there's such a trend now with critics and reviews of trying to outright the films. In other words, like you know what I mean? Like try to write the most clever quote unquote. Like where you really. You almost feel bad where you're like, all right, you're just trying to show everyone that you're a good writer as opposed to just saying whether or not you like this fucking thing. You know, why do you think that trend is happening? Is it just people trying to get above the din of all of the...
Probably insecurity, I imagine. Yeah. You know, they say, like, you're not going to take me seriously unless I try to write like that. Elmore Leonard's right. You know, just be straightforward.
Yeah.
don't use adjectives and adverbs.
Do you think that there's more do you think that it's there seems to be a trend of hardcore negativity about stuff right now? Why is it that people take negativity more seriously than people who are straightforward or positive?
It makes them feel like they're being serious, and you think comedy is easy and so forth. You know, comedy is very hard. You know, being pretentious is easy. So yeah. I don't know why it is either. I'm mystified.
Well, what's what is next for you after this book? Are you shooting any? Are you doing any shows?
I'm just waiting for Human Centipede 3.
As is America.
Yeah.
It's kind of the world.
Human Centipede 3. Human Centipede,
guys. Yeah. Around the world. Human Centipede 3. See, I'm gonna make that fucking joke work. I'm gonna make that 3 joke work.
Around the world. Yeah. Daft Punk's gonna do the soundtrack. Around
as people are just linking up ass to mouth around the globe. Yeah. it's just like dropping that communication cable that they did for between England and America on the floor of the ocean.
This time it's just the bureaucrats from the European Union.
Yeah,
just them.
you live in New York now.
I do.
And what are you gonna do? Like, honestly, what are you?
Well, I'm not leaving or anything. I like it there.
I stick around.
What are you trying to say?
I want to see you back on television. I really want to see you back on television.
I'm not really a television person, I don't think.
Why? You did it for 13 years.
The only people who can be successful on television, like in sort of chat shows and stuff, I think have to be stand-up comics. I mean, you really learn your craft doing that. You know, audiences, you're a performer. None of which I am.
But you do have that... But you're a funny guy, and you also have the straightforward information approach, which I think is unique.
Yeah, well, thank you very
especially
much.
With someone like me who is so insecure about saying straightforward things that I have to make jokes around everything.
Yeah.
So I always respect people who can be like, no, this is how this thing is. You know, like it or don't.
I have a hard time doing that, too. That's why I start every statement with like and end it with you know.
like John Ray.
Yeah, you know. Or whatever.
Know what I'm saying? That's the urban version of you know.
I long for the approval of the crowd, and I think I'll never have that.
Did you?
You're so much a comic, and you don't even know.
Well, do you have any good kind of just? I mean, sorry to be all dishy, but just any kind of good story you could throw at us where someone
Someone was what?
Someone was just where you thought they were going to be awesome. They were just like, wow, what a mega douche this turned out to be. Can you throw anyone under the bus?
Well, again, you know, you don't really get to know anybody talking to them I guess you do when you're doing it.
Or who was real? Let's take the high road. Who did you meet where you thought, well, this person's going to be a douche, and they turned out to be like the nicest person in the world?
It's always Tom Cruise. Is it?
Everybody that knows him loves him.
Yeah.
I want to be friends with him.
Man, David Thompson has a great take on him. He says he's the only actor, leading man today, that is not influenced at all by Brando. And he really goes back to the 30s, 40s kind of template of the star, which I think is David Thompson is one of my favorite film critics.
Oh, that's cool.
Everybody should go read him. He lives here in California.
Let's go knock on his door right now.
Yeah.
And read him.
Hey, it's the Nerdist guys and Kurt Loder. What are you doing? I'm having breakfast. I'm meeting with Kurt. It's a pleasure to meet you, Kurt Loder.
I did have an experience with Elvis Costello once because I went to interview him, and he was. I asked a question. I guess it went on too long. And I was saying, this and that, did you? And when I was finished asking the question, he said, are you speaking English? I felt so small. You know, I felt this small. But he actually turns out to be nice.
I love Elvis Costello.
The
I went and saw Alex Coletti, creator of Unplugged, was producing that chat series that Elvis Costello was doing in New York, and I went and saw one of those, and who was it? Julian Schnabel was on, or like a couple other people were on. And
Dave, where's it killed in New York? I have a lot of thoughts about him.
Well, this was a genius move on Coletti's part and the producers, but Schnabel referenced. Who else was on? It was. Lou Reed. Lou Reed was on, and Schnabel referenced an old poem or something. And Coletti was just like, fucking bring it up and throw it in the prompter. And so...
That wasn't prearranged, was it, do you think?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
It didn't, because afterwards...
Was it Gelmore Schwartz?
I can't remember. Probably I can't remember what it was. Because, I mean, the whole time I was just feeling like, this feels a little hoity-toity. But because afterwards, the reason that I know it wasn't planned is because Alex was like, yeah, we heard him say the thing. And so we just fucking threw it right up in the prompter. And Schnabel just started what looked like was reciting the poem from memory. But it really was like all the credit went to the producers who were like, throw that up in the prompter. He's talking about a thing. But
well, they had it ready.
They whipped it off the internet and just pasted it into the prompter.
Well, that is cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. But the most fun thing about that was that it was in Studio 8H where they do Saturday Night Live.
Oh, wow.
That was kind of weird. You ever been to SNL taping?
Yeah.
They're fun.
Yeah, they're great. It's the worst show to see, like coming in off the street. You're standing out there waiting for hours. You finally get in. You're going to see it, Saturday Night Live. And you're sitting behind a big applause sign or something. It has the worst sight lines.
And then you got to watch it twice.
Yeah. You got to go home and watch it again and see what you missed. Yeah.
Well, this was a tremendous amount of fun, Kurt Loder. It is such an honor. I mean, honestly, you're it's really cool to meet you. It's funny. It is weird that you can work in the same... I mean, it is essentially like we worked in the same office for years. And then, now years later, like, oh, yeah, we never actually said, I saw him in the hallway, but we never actually...
No, you were up in the tower suite or something.
Are you kidding? I was in the satellite. But MTV's LA presence was a shitty satellite office in the Texaco building in Universal City, which was very bland.
Yeah.
There was no presence in Los Angeles. Single That was like the first real production that MTV had here besides Real World Los Angeles. And you go to New York and it was like, the walls are purple. there's fur on the cubicles. Yeah. It was so
people
much
were skateboarding
fun.
Down the hall.
Yeah, it was totally like that. like living and shooting in Los Angeles, I didn't get any of that stuff. Like all the VJs were in New York. Everyone like Kennedy, like everyone in New York. I miss that so much about MTV. It's just the idea. I really think they had it right with. They had, like a pantheon of personalities that really drove the point of view of the channel. And you liked some of them, you didn't like other ones, but you always identified with one of them. Yeah. And it was a really fun time.
Yeah, I think things can, media things can only be fresh, new, and hot once. Everything cools off. So something new will come along maybe in our lifetime. Who knows?
Did you think that there was I wrote about it in my book that there was this weird MTV curse. And it doesn't really apply anymore, but the curse, being like
well, Superman curse.
Yeah, exactly.
You're gonna get crippled or die.
Wow. Jesus Christ.
Well, that's a Superman curse. What? No. I didn't make the curse, Chris.
But you brought it up.
Are you excited about Fables coming out next month?
I'm looking forward to it, yeah. I'm the only one that actually reads comics here.
I read comics? What are you talking about?
Well, you read The Walking Dead.
No, I've also been reading the DC Universe. Don't fucking act like you know what I do, Matt Myra.
I do, Chris. I've been watching you.
I've been reading Animal Man. I've been reading Justice League. I've been reading the Spider-Man reboot. I'm about to read Lock and Key. Fuck yourself in the face, Matt.
All right. If I can bend that way, I will, Chris. Thank you.
If I lose that way, buddy, one day
you'll find that guy. I finally lost my train of thought. What was I saying?
I think you were talking about Fables.
Yeah. Fables. No, but yeah, we were talking about Fables.
the MTV curse. Yeah, I'm the MTV curse. The MTV curse being that if you worked there as a VJ or whatever, an on-air personality, that no one else would take you seriously anywhere else and you just wouldn't really do anything after MTV.
I don't know. Well, maybe, people all move on into obscurity in old fields.
Well, where's Sway nowadays?
He's still there.
Oh.
Well, there you go.
He's actually like a star. He's a great guy.
Like, what happened to Jesse Camp, you guys?
He used to come into the
record store. He's at PetSmart now.
Oh,
really?
Yeah, all the time. He was really into cassette tapes. Really into them.
This was last year.
Yeah.
But like loudly, he wanted everyone to know that he was into cassette tapes because it's weird.
No, last I heard, he works at fucking Petco or PetSmart.
Really?
Yeah, on Santa Monica.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, still dresses the same, too. Still has that weird voice.
Who else do you remember from?
Dave Holmes is still around.
Oh, Dave is great.
He's in the comedy scene in L.A. now.
Yeah. I love Dave Holmes.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's fantastic.
That was a fun contest.
Kennedy has a radio show in the morning now on 98.7.
I saw her
the other day. She's great.
Her show was great. She plays good music and like just funny.
I remember Kennedy used to, when I was at UCLA... I was a philosophy major, but I took the animation track, because I want to learn animation. So I would work all night in the animation lab, and I would listen to Kennedy on overnights at K-Rock as she played this character. Well, played a character, but she called herself the Virgin Kennedy.
And it was just a weird overnight chat show where she barely played music and talked about nothing. And meeting her at MTV was like such a huge, awesome. Like, oh my God, you're kidding. And we got to, I finally saw her again. There was an unofficial 30th anniversary party here in Los Angeles where it was just executives and some of the talent, and the Zappas were there, and Kennedy was there, and maybe David Holmes and a couple other people, but I don't know. It was just really nice. Like, everyone seems to be doing okay. And so that means that dumb curse was all in my fucking head.
Yeah.
Can we move back to you majored in philosophy and animation?
Yeah, well, I majored in philosophy, but I studied animation on the side because you had to be a film major to actually major in animation.
So does your animation, is it somewhat deeper than your average animation? Does it?
I cannot actually approve that any of my animation existed.
Oh.
Nor can I prove that the animation that I am seeing is the same animation that you are seeing.
What's the curse of philosophy?
In between each frame, reality drops out for like a nanosecond. When you're actually there are actually frames that you can't perceive, but that's where reality is dropping out in between when you shoot in threes, where you shoot three frames per second or 6 frames per second or 12 frames. That's how that. No, I entered UCLA as a math major, which I found to be tremendously overstructured, and then I went to the philosophy department.
Wow.
Which was sort of like brain math. Spiritual brain math. What did you major in?
I was only at college for 2 years. I hated it. So, an English major. Yeah. Whatever.
What a jerk.
Yeah. I know exactly. Jay, what does that contribute?
What are you going to?
So, I wasn't really cut out for the institutional education system, I don't think.
Seems like you did okay.
Wow. Yeah. Very lucky. Very fortunate. Very blessed.
It's weird now that. I mean, I guess I understand. I'm not saying people should not go to college, but it just seems now with
why aren't you saying that?
Well, I don't want to. Well, because I think some people it works
costs
for.
A lot.
It costs too much, and
works for some people.
A lot
it doesn't
of people
work for
don't
others.
Need to go to college.
I guess that's true. I mean, we do
keep learning, but you don't really.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
There is certainly a jinx. I don't know how this works. Are we not allowed to talk? Are you supposed to say something?
You like pinch him and poke him, and then he owes you a Coke.
Oh shit! I don't like Coke. All right, let's forget this. Forget this ever happened.
I just had a moment that I think I was passed out or something.
What was so it? Was 3 days.
That was the audience. All right.
I didn't go to college. I don't feel like I missed out on anything. Like, you know, I'm a professional writer, so I'm think it worked out okay.
Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just feel like
I went for 5 years. It was great.
Well, when I went
5 years, were you
failed
1 year?
I changed the degree I was going for, the school I was going to 3 times.
Were you in philosophy too or something?
No, it was English and then digital media production.
Oh, cool.
And then English.
With a minor in Dave Matthews fiddleism.
That was kind of my major.
Such a shitty class.
You guys.
This was the final.
Dave's great. When we finally get Dave on the podcast, you'll all have to answer.
No, I'm sure he's good. I'm sure he'll be a great guest because he's a nice, funny guy, it seems.
Yeah, yeah. He'll forgive us for all of this, so we can say worse things.
No, because what's going to happen is Matt's going to be like, Chris, Jonah, why don't you tell our guests what you said about him on that other episode?
If you don't remember, I printed it out.
Dave, you guys probably didn't bring this. Here's a bunch of impersonations Chris has done of you, Dave Matthews, over the...
But you know what? After meeting you, I'm sure he'll understand why we made fun of him, to make fun of you.
Oh, my.
Shattering.
He has a new record coming out, doesn't he?
No.
Oh. That's too bad. No,
that was Kurt trying to...
Well, I guess...
He can make it okay.
He has night three of the Caravan Tour in New York.
Yeah, there's that. Have you seen the entire box of The Grateful Dead, every show played on the 73 Europe Tour?
Oh,
good Lord,
no.
500 discs sold out in a couple days after it was announced.
Of course.
But why? So people want to hear slightly different versions of the same song?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Version number 73 of Space.
Wow.
Yeah, some guys at work, it's like they were got in someone's car and they had a live Fish album and they're like, oh wait, this is Boulder, Colorado, right?
I can do that with Dave Matthews' records and it's fucking weird.
That's strange because they're the same every night, aren't they?
No, they're very different every night, Kurt.
Oh, they jam. That's right. I forgot.
Do you know what? I'll tell you why I understand that.
How do you do quotes on radio? Like,
I'll tell you why I understand that, because when I was growing up, I could do the same thing with stand-up. I could tell you if I heard something, oh, that was from this special, that was from the Showtime special, like that, just by the intonation.
The audience is mic'd weird, the applause, like I can tell by that. Like, I don't have to hear the music, I can just hear
the audience.
And
sometimes on one night they go, wow, wow, and other nights they go, wow, wow.
Yeah. He's got it.
Matt has Dave sense.
I have 70 gigs of the Dave Matthews Band.
Don't say that out loud.
Sorry. Yeah. Everyone needs to know that.
People actually do need to know that Kurt Loder's book, The Good, the Bad, and the God Awful, is available now, or is it coming out?
It came out last week.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right. Awesome.
It can be bought together. You know, in some places.
I'm going to Kindle that as soon as I get home.
Yeah, sure. I get less money out of that.
But... Oh, no. I got a real book. I bought the Kindle.
No, movie books are nice. To just like I like having like comprehensive movie review books like on a shelf.
I do too. I love it. I don't know if anybody else does, but I like Pauline Kael books.
Yeah, Anthony Lane's.
But they're just fun to read.
Yeah, definitely. And plus, like because they're just bites. They're great. Toilet books.
And it's almost Christmas. Oh, dare you. It's another good reason to buy it.
Yeah. Hey, look what I just flipped to. Year One.
Whoa! Yeah. I saw Nightmare on Elm Street in there. Was that the remake or was that the...
Which one?
I saw when he was flipping through, I saw that you reviewed Nightmare on Elm Street.
It was the Jack Earl Haley.
That could have been so good!
The first death was the best death. And everything else was...
Who was that?
Yeah. You know what's the part?
Why do you have to remake that movie?
I don't understand. The practical effect from the original where he's coming through the wall, they did that digitally. But that was a practical effect 20 years ago. You think it'd be even cheaper now to do it than to fucking make it digital where it looked worse.
That
was the one thing in the trailer.
Freddy Krueger needs to have that sort of a hokey sense of humor that Robert Englund brought to it. Yeah. You can't say those lines.
He's the most lovable child molester ever.
He didn't really start being that funny until Dream Warriors, the third one.
Yeah.
And that's when the sense of humor and the kind of the sick.
That's when he became aware. Like Leslie Nielsen
in the third movie. Yeah.
Heather Langenkamp was in that one, right? The third one? She came back.
She was the doc. She was the doctor.
She was one of the...
Yeah, who was trying to prescribe...
Frank Darabont? Or no, who wrote...
Darabont wrote Dream Warriors.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
Yeah. And The Blob.
Yeah. That's right.
Which is a great, great movie.
I was on the set of that when they were making that.
Really?
Like in Hancock.
Damn it! Did you get it?
Oh, wow.
There was a lot of fake smoke and they were remaking The Blob. Again, why? But.
I thought it was great. I thought it was really cool what they did. We rewatched it on Halloween and they do all these things where they spend so much time setting up this main character kid and they kill him instantly. And then there's the sheriff who's also, he's Dale in The Walking Dead right now.
Yep.
It's you think he's going to save the day, he dies right away. Yeah. It's just they do a lot of weird things like
Dale
that.
Dale is played by a Jeffrey DeMunn.
Yes, that's right. and who else... What else is there's?
I wanted to see that movie where the creature comes to a small lake town and terrorizes a doctor played by Richard Dreyfuss. What about Blob? I wanted to see. Come on, I'm gonna make these movie puns work.
What about
Blob? I'm gonna make these movie puns
that
work.
That was Lake Winnipesaukee.
Richard Dreyfuss is in Piranha 3D,
which is fucking great.
That's a great movie.
Yeah,
that's fabulous.
It's a great movie.
So good.
Yeah, I loved it. I can't wait for them to make it a sequel.
I'm
3D3.
Yeah. I'm so glad that that's happening. That's
I like Adam Scott is perfect in that movie.
Adam Scott's gonna win a fucking Academy Award someday.
Yeah, he's so great.
Yeah.
Every time you see that, he's one of those guys that whenever he's on screen or whatever he's doing, it's like Kristen Wiig. Wherever they're on screen, you're like, I just want to watch that person.
Yeah.
Whatever choice they're making is fucking.
Remember him from he was in The Aviator.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, he was Howard Hughes' right hand man, a little slick back hair, mustache.
He was in Star Trek: First Contact.
Oh.
He was on the Defiant Bridge. He says, "Our weapons are down. There's another ship coming in. It's the Enterprise." Yeah. That's his line.
Wow, that's really amazing. Recited like a Dave Matthews concert.
Yep.
Thank you for bringing it back to that.
Of course. Yes, yeah. I had the weird SNL dream last night that I have twice a year. I'm hosting SNL, which is never going to happen. But I'm hosting SNL. I've not been to rehearsal.
Why do you have this dream twice a year?
I don't know. I just do. Twice a year I have the SNL dream. I'm hosting SNL. We're in the middle of a scene. But I've just appeared in the scene, no rehearsal, I don't know what's going on, I can't read the words on the teleprompter, and we're all just waiting. We're all just waiting for something to happen. And it's funny, I've had that dream so many times over the years that my brain does recast the dream with current cast members. So Kristen Wiig was in the one last night, and I was like, God damn it, she's so funny, she just saved the scene that I ruined.
And then
did Anna Gasteyer save the scene for you?
Anna Gasteyer has been in them before. Yeah.
What about Denitra Vance?
No Denitra Vance. Denitra Vance has never been in one. Well, Kurt Loder, thank you so much for coming to Meltdown on a Saturday. It was really, really great to see you, and I hope to see you again soon. I wish you the best of luck with the book.
Follow Kurt on Twitter. It's very good. No, you do good.
Yeah, Matt freaked out when he realized you were following him on Twitter. Like, genuinely freaked out.
I was like, oh my God, Kurt Loder's following me.
he's going to unfollow you now, but
well, that's fair.
At least you got to enjoy it for a while.
At least you know why you're unfollowing me now.
All right, thanks everyone. Enjoy your burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.